Welcome to the Doghouse in a special episode of Bad Prediction Tuesdays. we're gonna talk about 2027 rule changes. We're gonna talk about the upcoming motocross season. We're gonna talk about what MotoGP looks like without a Marquez name in it, can we just make everybody's default Buliga for the rest of the season? I mean, I've already done that, but
yeah,
I mean,
that's just useless. Here, yeah. I do have one thing I want to mention out of the Moto America news. Now, I'm way off on. I am just struggling today. I had, for the listeners that don't know, I had a ear surgery about almost 2 weeks ago now, and it just was terrible.
Worse than the first go around, right?
Yeah, way worse. So I'm just struggling. So one thing I want to talk about is an accident that happened last week, or well, 2 weeks ago now, that we didn't talk about at Moto America's race down there at Barber. And I didn't comment on it last week on the show. It was a terrible accident. I don't know if you watch both super sport races, but Ella Drea came over and I don't even remember who it was who dumped it in front of her. And by the time she came over, she hit and the bike was laying middle of the track and she was kind of like looking to dive in and cut the corner and hit it right in the seat. So end over end and big wreck. Oof. And I didn't really say anything because I wanted to wait to make sure she was okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I presume that means she was hospitalized, right?
Yeah, I believe she broke her pelvic bone in two places and fractured some vertebrae and concussion. Just a big...
I wonder if she called Alex Marquez and asked what his insurance policy was.
I don't know. Maybe the worst wreck. Definitely the worst wreck I've seen this season. And she's young, right? She's like...
She's got to be, yeah. Yeah, or 17?
I think so. I think she's the minimum age for a super sport. Mm-hmm. She's young. And I just think she's riding one of Melissa Parrish's bikes, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably the exact bike.
Yeah. So... Just
so that bike is not prepared to be anywhere but the back of the pack, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, about middle of the pack.
Melissa Paris was never a middle of the pack rider. She was a back of the pack rider.
Yeah, I think she builds a better bike than she rides.
Oh, okay.
And stuff, and just a terrible accident. But she's, you know, I'm not saying she's okay. She's a mess. But she's
got to be. It wasn't life threatening. It's just
it wasn't life threatening.
She's probably going to miss quite a bit of time.
Yeah, if you watched it, that was kind of questionable.
I'll have to go back and take a look.
It was a big hit. It was just a big hit. So,
I always say that, you know what, in motorcycle racing, it's not the crashes where you fly off the bike. It's the crashes where somebody hits you when you're off the bike.
That's about the only thing.
That's where most people get the really serious injuries.
That's about the only thing she lucked out on.
Although I imagine that Alex Marquez is saying hitting somebody else's bike will do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it's flying.
Too. Yeah. So, all right. Let's get into the MotoGP stuff you wanted to get into.
Yeah, so there more and more details are coming out about the rule changes. Some have been published. All the engine and the electronics changes have been published. Some of the other changes have not been. So, for example, we know that none of the ride height device, no launch device. So these are again all part of engine management. They're gone. No ride height. Did I say ride height? I don't remember what I did. Okay, yeah. So ride height, and some of a portion of the I was going to say the aero related suspension changes, right? Not ride height, but ones like dealing with, you know, traction control and things like that are limited. Some have been removed completely. Don't think the ones that have been removed completely have a significant effect. Some of the engine management stuff having to do with fuel economy and things like that, but I think that's kind of a non-issue. The ones that it's going to be interesting because it took the riders, I don't know if you remember this, Phil, it's only been in like the last 6 years that they've had launch control on these bikes. Otherwise, yeah, it was twisted throttle, right?
I remember that. I would have said it was like 10 years ago, but, you know.
So it's somewhere between 6 and 10 years ago. I don't remember exactly.
I can't say that I would tell you when. I know it's been since.
And I don't think they all adopted it initially. It was always Ducati was always the first to come out with these things. And then they had to make a rule change associated with that when Ducati would put it out. So it made it. You know, they had to stipulate what the rules were relative to that. Ducati did everything. I mean, aero, launch control, ride height is all Ducati. So anyway, so most of that's gone now. Aero is significantly gone. There's basically no aero. So you're allowed the standard that you would get on a production bike, which means just fairing. Venting, I believe they're allowed to have vents in the fairing for brake temperature, but that's not significant. Again, you have that on production bikes. So, and also for the engine coolant. There were some really good comments on some of this stuff that came out, and one of them is actually a former racer, and he had a good comment. He said it was very hard for those guys to learn how to use the launch control. Because it's a combination of engine management and brake management, right? At the same time for launch control, right? So you hear when spin those things up, it's just like it would be even in a car that has launch control, like a Corvette or a Lambo or any of those, where the transmission is disengaged, the revs go up really, really high, the brake is on, and it just basically drops, right? So when you hit the launch control, or I think in some of them, you let go of it. You hold it in after you engage it. And then on some of them, actually, you press the button to go. But anyways, it took the riders like 2 seasons before the ones that got it, actually. And now this guy made a good point. He goes, now the problem is going to be that a lot of these younger riders, that's all they know, is the launch control on the GP bikes. And he says, we're going to get a lot of false starts next year.
Here's what I'm going to say is I don't like the launch control. I don't think I liked it at the time.
I don't know whether I do or don't, but I don't know. I don't think I have a preference one way or the other. I mean, it's in F1. They have launch control in F1. Yeah. So being a MotoGP doesn't really bother me from that standpoint. But if it's a dependency and these guys no longer know how to start by dropping the clutch and all that. And this guy, who knows, says that there's going to be a ton, and it's going to get annoying because you're going to get a bunch of guys that are going to get that in every race for about 6 months, he said.
I got to imagine they're going to start practicing that right away. If that's
I think they will, but it's
and if not, then they're not actually professional.
No, but you can practice it all you want, but there's a certain muscle memory part to it, right? Where you don't have to think about it in a race. If you watch these guys, right, they engage this thing and then they get down, right? And you can see them do that, right? Right at the beginning of the race. Yeah. So you see, you still see it because it's still going to be available in World Superbike. And you watch that. And then, you know, the objective is when the red light goes out, you want to release or push, depending upon which system they're using, to engage it, right? Now you have to take the positive action of, you wind partial, right? They'll raise the throttle up, but dropping the clutch is a little bit of a skill, right? Because if you just drop the clutch, that's going to be a disaster, right? On a rev bike, yeah, you can't.
When I watch racing, and it doesn't actually matter what form. Here you go, and I can prove this by my watching habits. I don't watch Formula One nowhere near as much as I used to.
Yeah.
I don't watch NASCAR hardly at all.
Yeah.
right? Hardly at all. And some of it is because NASCAR and even Formula One has been put your foot to the floor and run the bike run the vehicle as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And MotoGP was kind of turning into that.
I don't think kind of. I think very much that. Right. These guys run these bikes flat out.
I like guys who win races who have racecraft, right? When I watch races, I enjoy the rider, the driver, doesn't matter. Racecraft. Figuring out where they're faster than the other guy, passing them there, mm-hmm. working their way in that corner, working their way, pushing their way around.
I think you still have that in MotoGP.
You do, right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. you start adding things like all these other things that they've added to the bikes over the year, all the technology stuff.
To make it easier.
To make it easier. Yeah. And I don't think the best riders in the world need the easiest bike to ride.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
NASCAR has become boring because now it's like, if you're out in front, you're gone.
Yeah.
Formula One, if you're out in front, you're gone.
Yeah. Certainly, there's a lot of passing. Certainly on the longer tracks in NASCAR. It's true.
Did you watch Le Mans at all? 24 Hours of Le Mans?
I did not.
The I almost said the F word. That's how awesome this was. The Camaro that Hendrick Motorsports built for Le Mans was running down and just shitting on, there's no other word for it, on prototypes on the Mulsanne Straight. 3,500-pound V8, 750 horse, or whatever. Maybe it's running 900. I don't know. It was running down prototypes with all their aero, we got everything in the world. Then that Camaro got on the Mulsanne Straight and was like, America, F yeah, and went.
Yeah.
But you knew at the end that guy couldn't stop, right? You know, like if you're going to be like, hey, we're going to go all this, you got to figure out what to do that. You got to learn how to race the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Cars are so sophisticated nowadays, just coming off the factory floor, even.
Yeah.
There's so much in traction control. And I know that, like, on my car, I have a thing called track mode. In it. Yeah. And when you engage that, it basically controls everything other than throttle position. Everything else is effectively controlled.
Torque and all that other stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Torque and traction control and shifting points and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. They have this new thing called, and racing has had it for a while, called torque vectoring.
Yeah,
where they're able to transfer torque to the outside to let the car turn to the left easier, right, or whatever you're doing, right? NASCAR, it's lefts, but you know, generally, or you get on a road course where the torque can be, you can vector the torque from the left to the right, and therefore the car can dive into a corner tighter. But that's true on motorcycles as well, but to a lesser extent because you don't have opposing torque, right? But the way they do it was with traction control in MotoGP, right? Where you can dive in and, you know, when you see these guys overcook, a corner, right, and get driven to the outside. Well, they would have been in the stands a decade ago.
Yeah, a decade ago.
They've been in the stands. Yeah.
So what I see the changes, right? And I know a lot of people have been pooping on the changes and a lot of the riders are bitching. But, you know, I mean, like Casey Stoner was like, Casey Stoner bitches all the time. The only thing that's benefit for the sport is the launch control. Everything else is just for the engineers.
Well, you know, even Casey Stoner, when he was riding and they were starting to come in, you know, things like traction control and things like that, he was very much opposed to it.
Yeah.
He said the sport's changing to try and make all the riders equally, you know, give them an equal setting. Which you might think that creates better racing.
It doesn't.
No, it just makes guys that don't belong out there appear to be somewhat competitive. Guys go out and earn it without any help, right?
You might even remember when this originally happened. I almost got into a fist fight in a NASCAR media center one time. because the guy from ESPN was there and he was going, these are the 50 best drivers in the world, or 43 best drivers in the world. And I laughed at him.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? And I was like, they're not even the 43 best drivers at the track. They're just the 43 guys who got the best sponsorships. I was like, there are guys out there that run super modified and modified and legends and all these other kind of cars.
Who do way more with way less.
Right. And that could run the wheels off these people.
Yeah.
Right.
These are guys that got lucky.
Right. And and I sit there and now I don't believe that in Supercross and Motocross. Right. I believe those are the best riders in the world.
Yeah, well, Supercross and Motocross, they don't have anything. The only thing that they have on those bikes now that they didn't have 15 years ago is traction control. That's it.
But I believe those are the best motocross riders in the world, Supercross riders in the world, right?
Like, with the exception of Ken Roczen.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
and probably.
And his only advantage is Lee Diffie.
Right. But. I'm a little not sure if I believe that in MotoGP. That's not saying I'm trying to poop on Marc Marquez. I think Marc Marquez arguably is the best motorcycle rider in the world at this state and point when he can ride.
2026 wouldn't tell you that, but I'll give you that when talent he finishes the level. Season up. I mean,
like NASCAR,
we've had this discussion a couple times, and I get into this argument online with people all the time. Who think that Marc Marquez, if you look at the numerics, you'd say he's the best rider, maybe the best rider of all time. You get that argument with people too, right? You could make that, but he's had all the advantages, right? He's had all the advantages.
Okay.
To me, you know who I think and I get in arguments about this all the time.
Wayne Rainey.
Who I think the most talented rider on in the MotoGP grid is?
Quartararo.
Yep, Quartararo, I think, is the most talented rider.
So here's why I say could be Marc Marquez, right?
Yes.
Because I've seen
there's no question he's an extremely talented rider.
And I've seen him in different disciplines do the same thing. When he used to have the Super Stigio and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, I feel like if I drop him on a NHRA drag bike, he's like Jiggy Dog, right?
Yes.
I think any bike you put JD Beach on, he has the ability to win that race.
Yeah, you can't argue with that.
Right? I view Marc Marquez as that, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Right? Quartararo, I think the same thing of. I don't know if I feel the same way about some of the other riders in MotoGP.
I definitely don't.
Right? I don't feel like any of them can win on any kind of bike.
I think there's a handful.
I know you're saying, well, he doesn't need to know how to ride a dirt bike to ride a MotoGP bike and everything.
Oh, but there's a lot. There's a lot to get out of riding a dirt bike that does apply to MotoGP.
And it's the control, and it's the racecraft, and it's the that's what I enjoy in racing.
Well, so the number one,
the bikes are going to be where the rider has to be the main difference.
Yeah. One of the things Zarco said when he was in Moto2, and I think it was his second championship in Moto2, and he had gotten a bunch of criticism for off-season training and motocross training, right, off-season. And he said the value of moto and why so many riders do motocross season is actually has more to do with bike control, body control, and bike control than it does anything else. And it gives you a comfort level, even though you're going to a machine that weighs three times as much. Granted, these prototypes are light. They still are very heavy compared to a 1,000cc, but it's still a lot heavier bike. But he said it just gives you confidence in your body control and the bike's control and understanding how your movements affect it. And I think that's definitely true. I think that's definitely true. And riders who don't do that off-season training, fear of injuries or whatever like that, I think they end up being mediocre riders.
Yeah. And I want to see the best riders, not the best holder-oners with sponsorships. Right.
I know, but sometimes you don't get an opportunity
You don't get the opportunity.
If you looked at Quartararo, the last 5 years, you'd say, well, what the hell has he done? Well, what the hell has anybody
done a lot
on
with
a
crappy bike?
Exactly. I was going to say, what else has anybody on a Yamaha done?
I mean, I've said time and time again on this show, I think when you talk the GOAT of MotoGP, obviously he doesn't have the number of championships.
No.
But how can you not include Wayne Rainey in that? Right?
There's a lot.
Championship with arguably a seventh place bike.
Yeah, I think anybody except for Joanne Mir, sorry Joanne, that wins a MotoGP championship, it's kind of hard to poop on them. Winning a MotoGP championship is a grueling season and making, you know, stupid decisions or wise decisions that
collect the points, we always say, right?
Talent riding wise, I think there's only a handful of riders in MotoGP that you would say are in the upper echelon of riders.
Rossi, Supermoto, flat track, right? Like I'm assuming he did motocross training.
He did. He built a motocross track at the farm.
Right. So when I look at guys like that, and I know that if you took Rossi and you dumped him on a motocross track and put him in the race, he's good. If he won, nobody would be shocked, right?
Yeah.
Where I feel like if you did that to Jorge Martin, you'd be like, oh my God, what did everybody else mark? You know what I mean? Like there are certain guys, and if the changes weeded out so that the top talent guys are at the front racing, that to me is going to bring better racing and more exciting racing.
Yeah, and I think
all I got to do is hold on and the bike makes up for my mistake.
And I think the only way we know that is...
Is watching it.
You know, I don't know what's going to happen. This could completely turn the series around. We could end up having Japanese bikes dominate next season. We don't know. We really don't know.
I don't know if I care if I think the riders are the main deciding factor in who wins. Like, that's why I gave up NASCAR. NASCAR is like, if you're going to win. F1, my team got me out front, I'm going to win.
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to know that, right? I just don't know that in the first season of such drastic changes, that we're going to know that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think a couple years, I think. A couple years for the manufacturers just before they switch back to 1,000 cc's, which is what they'll do.
They will.
Yeah, they will. And then the electronics will come back. They'll be, you know, it's going to depend, you know. A lot of this is being, you know, driven by Liberty Media, because they think that, you know, closer, they don't like, and I get that. If I was running a series, I'd want to see the championship come down the last race if at all possible. Yeah,
well, I don't, right? Like you're saying Liberty Media, but they started talking about these changes before Liberty Media was announced.
Yeah, but I think a lot of these were on the plate. And Liberty Media, you know, basically said, yeah, I like the idea of doing that. What do we do? What's going to even the competition out? If this doesn't even the competition out, then it's a lost cause, in my opinion. Right? If Ducati dominates after this much changes, then you better just swallow hard.
Here's what I'm going to say is I want it where the riders are the main difference. And I'm not saying I want a spec bike, but like, remember how it used to be Yamaha were better in the corners and Ducati was faster on the straightaway and Honda did this well and these people did that. I want to see where each track has different things that maybe one track bike does better than the other. And then it's a rider thing. And over the course of the season, it's what rider can keep his bike in on the tracks that don't suit him. Not we're just going to motor everybody down the street.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also would say it made me think, because we've been doing the show so long now, that that discussion about Ducati was greater in the straightaways. We used to say you would pick a Ducati rider if there was a lot of straightaways or long straightaways,
right,
on a given track, and if it was all twisties, you'd say the Yamaha had the advantage.
And if it was a mix,
and that was true, but nobody ever said that. And I know there's a lot of naysayers about Casey Stoner. But I think him getting out when he got out is a crime, because we'll never know how, you know, what kind of rider he would have been into his 30s. We never know. He didn't make it, right? And I don't. I think Ducati got a second chance because of Casey Stoner, and I think they had started to get sponsorship money. They were to pull money into the bike, you know, because he rode a bike that nobody else could. There was not another rider who could win on that bike. No one.
So that to me,
yeah,
is a great rider.
I agree. He's a great rider, which is why I think it's a crime that he retired, in his 20s.
If you take a bike and this guy racks up a lot of wins and he leaves and then the next guy racks up a lot of wins on it, was that a great rider or a great bike? It's hard to say that.
Yeah. In Casey Stoner's case, when he retired, nobody replaced him as a winner.
Right.
Nobody did. He won a championship. I think the next rider to was Davies was the next rider to win a race, and I think that was 2 or 3 years after Stoner left.
Yeah,
as Davies, right?
Davies was.
He was on Ducati.
Yeah, but that was Superbike.
I thought he was in MotoGP on Ducati. No?
Who won it in Ducati?
Dovizioso.
Dovizioso was the next guy, like 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah, it was a big. I mean, he kind of proved that nobody else could ride that bike but him.
Yeah, but I want that's I kind of miss those days where the rider made the biggest difference in the bike.
Yeah,
I'm not
and,
sure.
And I was going to say that's the problem Mark Marquez. That's the problem that Mark Marquez is always going to have, and I see it in the forums and stuff. And that is, everybody's saying, well, Mark Marquez has always been on the best bike. You know, he was on the Repsol Honda when it was the best bike. Yeah. He was on the Ducati when it was the best bike. But if he was on the Ducati at a time when it was the straightaway bike and would he have just been flying through the air as often as he did at Honda? Who knows?
What would Mark Marquez have done on a Yamaha?
Yeah.
Right? Winners find a way to win.
Eventually,
right?
You got to figure the bike out. The only person that I know of that went on a bike that had never won and in his first season on it won a championship is Casey Stoner, which just tells you what a great rider he is.
Yeah, winners find a way to win, right?
Yeah, I guess. But I can't. That becomes a knock then on Quartararo, which I just don't think it's not a bike that's capable of winning. You can't run at the lead.
It is. And part of finding that way to win is to tell the team, like, hey, get the bike better or I'm out.
I think he did. And that's why he's leaving. Right.
Yeah. Right. You know,
he said, I'll fulfill my contract, but then don't try and make me an offer to stay because I'm not.
And I just think in general, as somebody who's never even come close to running anything as wild as a MotoGP bike, some of the stuff they've done has made it easier to ride.
I don't think there's any question about that.
And I don't know if I want to see that in the top level of racing.
No, I agree because the next step after that is to replace the riders with the robot. Remember the Rossi robot? That's where you're going.
If all we're doing is what speed is, I can have the bike run on AI now and be faster.
So what we got coming up this weekend?
Everything. MotoGP, Moto America, World Superbike, and the start of motocross. Outdoor season.
Wow. Busy weekend.
Everything is this weekend. Busy weekend.
Cool.
That's good.
Is that the last race of the World Superbike season?
Probably the last race before their second summer break.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Yeah, we got everything this weekend coming up. There'll be tons of races.
Real quick prediction. Is Jet going to be back for the season opener in motocross?
I don't know. I can't
it's
even
complete, it's that. A complete crapshoot, isn't
it's
it?
It's still a complete crapshoot three days out.
Yeah, he's just not talking. The lack of noise is a little scary to me.
Yeah.
I would have to predict based on that he won't be back for the first one. But that's only because radio silence tells me that he's keeping his mouth shut intentionally. And maybe the team is as well. No one said anything.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing.
But he made a big point of not coming back, according to him, because he wanted to be prepared for motocross season. Yeah, so we'll see.
I know what he said. I think he's scared. I think he knows help's coming to breakfast because Hayden Deegan's on his way.
Yep.
But anyway, no, that's just me talking trash. F-U-E-D-I-F-E. Anyways, this has been the Doghouse. We'll be back next week. This 4 weeks of Warren Free. Woo! Oh.
Terrible.
We miss him terribly.